The Walking Dead Season 7 Episode 4 Service is still over, but we're just getting started answering your feedback here on The Walking Dead Feedback Show on Post Show Recaps. And now here are the two guys who are about to say thank you for your feedback. I'm Rob Sister, and he's Josh Wiggler. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well. Rob, what's your favorite type of service? What kind of service do you like the best? Room service?
Room service is good, yes.
Cell service is important.
Cell service is important. You need many bars.
Zombie bashing service is also pretty good.
That's also a very important service.
Steal half of your stuff service?
No.
That seems like an uncool thing.
No.
We should probably take a stand on that. You don't want to steal half of your stuff service.
No, you do not want that service. That, I mean, I would like some sort of a service that would come and take my junk, take like half of the stuff that I don't want.
Yeah, you could call Eugene for that.
That would be good. That would be
good. Yes. Yeah, so, you'd be great at taking out your junk.
Take away the clutter. No, not like that. Get your mind out of the gutter, Wiggler.
How you doing, Rob? It's been a minute since we've talked The Walking Dead.
Very good. Very happy to talk about this supersized episode with you and get into the feedback from this week's show. Of course, Alex Kidwell and I discussed it all on Sunday night. Josh, you were on assignment.
I was deep in the belly of the beast of the Westworlds is where I was on Sunday night.
Yes. And of course, here we are back together to take feedback questions from the listeners as we get ready halfway home on The Walking Dead first half of season 7, Josh.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? So much has been accomplished. It's really been a brisk pace here in the first half of the first half of season 7 of The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I think that just based on a lot of the feedback that we get, I think somehow I am more bullish on Walking Dead season 7, I think, than a lot of the feedback that we get.
You seem to be The Walking Dead Season 7's number one fan, as far as I can tell.
Like, how did this happen?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. And like, part of me wonders if this really is, and I hope that I'm not affecting your chances by saying this publicly, but like, are you angling for The Talking Dead? Like, are you going after Chris Hardwick's job because you are so super duper positive on Walking Dead right now?
You know what I think it is? I think that we've probably spent time with Negan, who I think is interesting. Like, I always was high on the governor, so I like having the big cartoonish villain doing the, you know, scenery chewing monologues in The Walking Dead. So I appreciate that. I've really enjoyed Negan. I know a lot of people are high on him, but a lot of people I've also heard criticism of Negan of too cartoonish and they're not super into him. So I like that. And I would much rather spend time with sort of like the principles of the show. And we've spent a lot of time with Rick this season. We had an episode that dealt a lot with Daryl, with Negan. Even the Carol and Morgan episode was fine. I get down on it when we really start to do a deep dive into like the side characters. And I'm like, who cares what's going on with some of these other people? And then like they have to give an episode to people that I don't necessarily care about as much.
How do you feel when an episode, you know, it wasn't like this was the Rosita and Spencer Roadshow episode. Are you cool with giving them like a tangential plot line like we got in this episode? Like, are you OK with spending, what would it have been, like a cumulative total of like 15 minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes on the Rosita storyline? That's OK by you?
I wouldn't say it's OK. I felt like that was the weakest part of the story for me. The stuff going on with Spencer. I wish that Rick would have just like pistol whipped Spencer and just been done with it. I mean, this is the second warning he's got in terms of hoarding the stuff from Alexandria. So I feel like that we really have no, like somebody almost died over this, Spencer.
I got to tell you, man, it's a really good thing that Kidwell was available on Sunday night and I wasn't there, because the lashing that I would have unleashed on Spencer like that close to the episode, I don't think would have been fit for air.
You hate him.
I'm so furious with this guy. We were already really mad at him for, you know, stealing all the table crackers and the sleeves of Ritz crackers and club crackers and everything that he was already hoarding, just desecrating the memory of his wonderful family. And now he's doing it again. He's doing it again. You thought that he had learned his lesson. You thought that he had been humbled. And now he's hoarding, what is it, the Bobcat? What was the name of this gun? He's hoarding two guns, Rob. He's got a whole bottle of booze. And he hasn't even told Rosita about this.
Yeah, like,
this is
right.
Just the Spencer stash. F this guy, man. F this guy. I'm with you. It would have been great to see Rick just take care of that. I thought it was a great threat that he tossed in Spencer's direction, but not enough.
Not enough.
You know, we need to take this much further. We need to take this all the way to the top, to the hilltop.
Because I thought it would have been interesting maybe if Rick just, you know, beats the you know what out of somebody, just as sort of like he's so frustrated with everything with Negan. Maybe is it Negan rubbing off on him? That's how he needs to be running his ship, like really tight. So he's got to sort of like, you know, be subservient to Negan, but he's going to really just take it out on Spencer when Spencer is not listening to him right now. That's got to get a point across to somebody. So that would have been, I think, a good moment.
I think in Rick's defense in that moment, I think that Rick is, this is not easy for him. This is not easy street for Rick Grimes right now. No. He is having a hard time bending the knee to King Negan. He does not like this whatsoever. And so it means this is an enormous exercise in self-restraint and discipline and your ability to be a grown-up and just deal with the situation, this awful, unspeakable, unimaginable situation of this man storming into Rick's life and completely conquering everything in his sight. And so I think for him to not lash out against Spencer the way that maybe the Rick of old very much would have done is a sign of growth, of maturity for Rick, that he is able to contain himself. Maybe it's not as good television because it would have been super satisfying to watch him just punch the crap out of this guy.
Yeah.
But maybe it's a sign of growth for Rick Grimes that he doesn't have to go there right now.
Josh, can we touch on The Talking Dead a little bit briefly?
Yes, of course. Of course. I always want to talk about The Talking Dead with you. That's the thing that I really come to these feedback shows for.
So I thought it was a subpar week on Talking Dead in terms of what AMC had on after the show. Really nothing going on. You know, not a very exciting group where we had executive producer David Alpert, who really didn't say too much of consequence. We had actor Lou Diamond Phillips.
LDP was in the house. I love LDP.
He really brought nothing to the table. He was neither Chavez. Here nor there with being crazy or funny. You know, it was just like he was trying to be like the poor man's Yvette Nicole Brown. And it just wasn't happening. So sorry to Lou Diamond Phillips. The highlight was Ron Funches, who was very funny whenever they went to him. I wish that they would have spent more time getting his take on everything.
Tell me more. What did Ron do? What had you so tickled about Ron?
Yeah, he was just very funny. He had a couple of really good lines where he had said that putting Olivia in charge of the food would be like putting him in charge of the marijuana stash in the apocalypse. So he's a really funny guy. I wasn't familiar with his work before that, but I definitely would want to check out his comedy after that. He was really funny. So I would have spent more time with him. The one thing that really got me worked up was, you know, they do these sort of like quizzes where they give you like trivia and like behind the scenes notes. And I don't know how much this is canon, but one of the cards that they put up was about Eugene. And, you know, it's like a trivia question of, oh, Eugene, what did he say he was putting together? And whatever, like he's putting together like a radio or whatever he said. And then they said that like, oh, Eugene still has bruises because this episode takes place only 3 days after Negan killed Abraham and Glenn. So, okay, that's fine. But Josh, how in the world does this episode take place only 3 days after those events? Where does last week's episode fit on the timeline? You're telling me that Easy Street has played 19,000 times in but the 3 days since Daryl was taken prisoner by Negan?
That's not what I'm telling you. I'm not telling you that.
How many dog food sandwiches could Daryl eat in 3 days?
A lot. Yeah, he's got a taste of the dog and now he can't let go. He's in.
What?
He's all the way in. Yeah.
How do you explain it? I mean, there's no possible way that the events of last week, all of the montages, that was 3 days. It was a long weekend at Negan's.
It was a long weekend at Negan's. We were talking about that. Weekend at Negan's was a real thing, and it was a great film, and everyone is very happy that it exists.
And
I don't know. That makes no sense to me, Rob. I'm trying to make sense of this information because that is wild that Daryl would be as zombified as he is after only 3 days. I don't buy that at all.
I mean, even if it was a week, because they say in the episode, you know, could say, oh, well, the card is in canon. But Rick says to Negan, like, hey, you said you were going to have a week. You're early. So hypothetically, it's 6 days. I mean, Daryl is broken in 6 days.
We thought better of you, Daryl. You know, we really did. We thought that you had, you know, more in you to pull this off, to resist Negan's ways for more than at least 6 days. And if it was 3 days, that's especially pathetic.
Yeah, not great. Look, Daryl.
What about this though? Is it possible that this is, you know, this scene with the saviors taking Daryl back to Alexandria? Is it possible that this is taking place within episode three? So this is like the middle of his torture situation. This was just stuff we didn't see during episode three.
No, because he's like catatonic in this episode. The only thing that I could maybe, if you want to argue somehow, is that was this taking place? Was Daryl being held prisoner separately? Like, was any of that from the prior episode? Was any of that happening before Daryl got to see Glenn and Abraham get killed? Like, was already Daryl, but you know, trying to, you know, be assimilated before they had to kill Glenn?
No, I don't think so. No. I think that that would be, you know, we're bending the timeline too much.
Okay, I don't want to get too hung up on this, but yeah.
No, but that's annoying. I'm annoyed with it.
Yes, annoying continuity stuff going on. And maybe you guys in the comments have some sort of explanation for what's going on. But tell me how Daryl has become this shell of himself, listening to Easy Street 10 million times and eating all these dog food sandwiches sometime in between 3 to 6 days.
No, and I don't want to come off as like I'm on my high tower about the implausibility of something changing too quickly when I'm like the number one 24 fanboy and so many improbable things happened over the course of a day on that show. That being said, I feel like what we saw Daryl go through with the dog food sandwiches and with Easy Street, while very painful and uncomfortable, the living quarters he's in, the fact that he has to wear that atrocious sweatsuit, all of it is really, really terrible. But over the course of 3 days, you would think that baseline Daryl Dixon is a little bit stronger than that, a little bit sturdier than that.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, Josh, let's get into the feedback.
All right. Let's get into the feedback this week. Lots of really good feedback to dive through here for this episode of Service. And let's start with a topic that we were actually already talking about. We were already talking a little bit about Negan and the reception of Negan, how fans are handling the Negan of it all. And you seem to be a big fan of this, Rob. Maybe a different Rob C, feeling a little differently. This is from Robert Craig, who writes in and says, "It seems like we're getting an awful lot of Negan getting shoved down our throats." Whoa. Do you think he's going to be a guy we love to hate, or is he going to end up being a Joffrey or a Ramsay where we just want him off our television screens? He's definitely a charismatic guy, but it's starting to get old pretty quickly. Robert's position is backed up by Hunter Scholl, who wrote in and said, "Has Negan jumped the shark? Last night's episode was the first time I've thought of him as an annoying person. He just never shuts up." So do you think that these are valid critiques of the Negan character? Do you think that he is this a villain that we love to hate, or is this a villain that we kind of just hate?
I think that he is a villain that we love to hate. I think that they might be counting on that we're going to love to hate him a little bit too much. And he probably has been a bit overexposed. I know that they're super excited about Negan. Like, all of the promotional materials for season 7 is all Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I mean, he's probably, like, if you were going to build the stars of Walking Dead, I think it's probably at this point, you know, Andrew Lincoln, Norman Reedus, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I think that he's probably third billing on the show at this point, right?
I think he gets the and credit technically.
Okay.
But I hear what you're saying, that like, if you're thinking about like who makes it onto the poster, the marketing leading up to season 7 truly was centered on Negan because they couldn't show you the rest of the cast too vividly because it would tip what happened to Glenn and Abraham. And on top of that, I would do you one more, and I would say that season 6 was like a Negan commercial. You know, the entire season is building up to everybody falling, you know, in front of Negan. That's really what season 6 is. And you could definitely debate whether or not it is worth spending a season hyping up a single character. And I think when you really hype up a character like Negan so much, it's almost impossible for that character to land fully on both feet for everybody. I think that there's certainly going to be people who are going to be like, "Really? This is it? This is the guy?" I think there's going to be that reaction. I think that there's going to be the reaction of people who are like, "This guy's not funny. He's just mean. And he's a really, he's a jerk of a guy." So I feel like you've got a few different perspectives on Negan. And I think that the hype doesn't help. And I do think that because Jeffrey Dean Morgan is such a great actor, and I think that he's playing Negan really well, even if he's slow monologuing a little bit too much for my taste, I think that some of that charisma offsets things for me, but I get the perspective of people who are really not feeling the Negan thing. I think Negan is he's a very, very dark character to have on the show right now. It's a very, very dark time on The Walking Dead. And I think that there is a sense on the show's part that people are going to respond well to the levity that he injects occasionally with his sort of ridiculous potty mouth, you know, dialogue. But sometimes I think it's just not connecting. I don't know what the reason for that is. Ultimately, I think it's probably a multifaceted reason, but I think hype is certainly a factor there for sure.
I mean, just of the four episodes in this season, three of the four were Negan heavy. He is probably the character that's been on screen the most here.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Season 7. So I think it's probably just too much of a good thing. I think that Negan is fine, but probably is better in smaller doses.
Hunter Scholl had also asked, people were thinking that Negan would last for more than one season, but at this pace, I don't see them stretching it out that long. It seems like things will get to a boiling point by the end of season 7. What do you guys think? Given the pace of Negan so far, and building off of what you just said, Rob, that we have seen Negan in 3 or 4 episodes so far, he's been heavily featured in all 3 of those appearances, especially in this last one. He's really all over it. Do you think that we are getting a Negan season 7, that season 7 is the story of Negan and that's it? Or do you see Negan being a player on The Walking Dead for the foreseeable future?
I feel like he's going to go beyond season 7, but he does have such a stranglehold on everything going on. I mean, all of the action in the season, like there's no other storyline that could be taking place. It's just all things are about Negan. So I wonder if we might have Negan fatigue by the end of the season in terms of that the only storyline is we need to be gathering more stuff to give to our overlord Negan.
I'm curious too to get your take on this. Like we've talked before about, you know, joking about like the Tabitha the goat flashback episode that is never going to happen. But who were the characters on this show that you wouldn't mind a flashback episode for? And coming into this season, for sure, I think most people would say Negan all the way. I want to spend 90 minutes in Negan's backstory and I want to learn what makes this guy tick. Do you think the desire for that is going to dissipate at all, or already has perhaps dissipated given how much we've seen of this guy already? Or for you, does that make you more eager, only makes you more eager to find out more about who this guy was pre-apocalypse?
Well, I wonder about when would be the right timing to do something like that. Like going back to season 4 with the governor back-to-back flashback episodes, it was like season 4 had started and we didn't see the governor for a while, right? He was absent from the first 4 or 5 episodes, and then we ended up having the flashback episode. So it just seems weird that be just Negan, then do flashback Negan, and there's 700 other people in this cast that we still have to service.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. They require full service. They require our attention. Interestingly, episode 4 of season 6 was also a 90-minute episode of The Walking Dead. That was the Morgan flashback episode. So they like their 90-minute episode 4s here on The Walking Dead.
In terms of how they might do a Negan flashback episode, I wonder if it could be sort of like a Lost-style Negan flashback episode where, you know, there's something big going on with Negan and then he, like, looks at Lucille and then we see, like, flashback to Negan in, like, some, like, minor league baseball affiliate, you know, he's like the water boy, or like we end up seeing like some insight into Negan and how he got here.
Yeah, I would like to see, you know, a flashback to Negan arriving on the island and showing that he has a briefcase filled with Lucille's with baseball bats of varying size wrapped in barbed wire.
Right, he worked in a sporting goods store.
He worked at he was working for a box manufacturing company that was connected to Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yes.
That's Negan's backstory.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that'll be good.
Yes.
Let's move away from Negan for a little while.
They have good service there.
They've got great service there. Let's move away. Speaking of service, this is a different type of communication that we're going to talk about. Rob, have you been paying attention to the Walking Dead conspiracy theory of the week?
No, I don't think so.
This is interesting. We'll talk this through. A bunch of people had written in and called in about this. Let's take our good friend Steve Davis. Let's let Steve talk us through what's going on here. There is something going on, Rob, in the Walking Dead world where people believe that there might be a plan brewing on Rick's part in terms of how to take down Negan, and it is happening right in front of us, and nobody until this week has even noticed it. This is Steve explaining what we're talking about here.
Hey guys, Steve Davis calling in. Do you think there was anything to that Morse code sign they had in the background in the very beginning of the episode? And then minutes later, we get Eugene building some sort of radio. Is that Chekhov's radio / Morse code that we're going to get sometime down the line? What are your thoughts? Thanks.
Okay, so that's one piece of it. There's a sign that you see in the episode, and I missed this on the first watch, that there is a sign that says something about Morse code. There's Eugene building the radio and wondering if there's something going on with that. But the theory really centers on Rick and Daryl, Rob, and the two of them being in each other's presence here in this episode, but not being able to speak to each other. But if you watch, Rob, if you watch Rick Grimes and Daryl Dixon, there's a lot of blinking that seems to be going on, especially on Daryl's part. And the theory posits that the Alexandrians, that Rick and everybody, have prepared for moments like these by teaching each other Morse code so that they can communicate with their eyes in case of capture, in case of situations of extreme duress. Do you believe this conspiracy theory to have any weight, Rob? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I think this is one of the craziest things we've talked about here in The Walking Dead. No way. Not in any chance do I believe. When did they come up with this plan? Like, I mean, Morse code is really hard to learn. I mean, yeah. When were they all sitting around? I mean, basically, yeah. All of season 6 took place in three days.
Well, the first half of season 6 was a single day, but then there's like at least a month time jump, if not a little bit more of a month time jump between the mid-season premiere and the next episode, and then all of that takes place in like 4 or 5 days afterwards. Yeah. Maybe that month everyone, you know, really buckled down and learned Morse code.
I mean, I can't really see that as being something that they were super worried about. With everything going on with we need to repair the fence and they had to, you know, rebuild Alexandria after the zombie horde just came through. I don't know if we had that much downtime to ultimately teach everybody Morse code in case of this. And if we were teaching everybody Morse code secretly, why have a Morse code sign up in Alexandria?
Yeah, like at that point, you know, Negan's like, why do you guys have the Morse code sign? This is suspicious. Give that to me and stop doing Morse code with each other.
Yeah. And then why did Rick need to talk to Daryl if they could just do Morse code?
Mm-hmm. Yep. But do you like the idea of there being like some sort of like Ocean's 11 type of moment or a Kobayashi mug of we get further along in Walking Dead and Rick's been acting like a little wuss and being subservient to Negan this whole time, but secretly he's been planning a counterstrike with all of his allies communicating with nothing more than his eyes.
No. Rick is shook. I mean, this is the whole point of this season is that Rick is coming. I mean, well, how do you explain the whole story where he's telling Michonne about how baby Judith, he had to come to accept this reality and he just has to live with it. And this is like one of those things. I mean, the whole point of that story is that this is Rick Grimes coming to acceptance with the fact that Negan is their boss now. And he's telling Michonne, stop what you're doing. Just stop resisting right now. We just have to go along with this. We'll be fine. We'll get to live. He's not like, hey, that's not the plan, Michonne.
Yeah, but his eyes, Rob, his eyes.
I'll go back and I'll take a look. I'm sure somebody's got a YouTube video of this as well. I'm not buying this. I think this is too far-fetched. I don't think if you are waiting for something like this to happen, this is not that show.
Yeah. Break out the buzzer. You're going to give this the thumbs down.
Like, we're not going to have the Moby Extreme Ways playing and then get the pullback reveal of, oh, what was really happening was this.
Yeah. But Negan is kind of a genius in his own right.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, he is a little bit. No, I'm not in on this either, just to be clear. But I do like it. I wouldn't put it past The Walking Dead to do something like this and then to reveal in episode 7 that they've been secretly planning something all along with this complicated Morse code system that they learned back in the day that they really didn't tease up whatsoever at all on the show, other than a few blinks between two characters and a Morse code sign on the wall. I would not put that past The Walking Dead for that, in their opinion, to be enough of track to lay down for a twist like this coming up. But I think it would be, whack. I would not be a fan.
It would be whack.
I don't like it.
I mean, the argument for it would be, yeah, but Glenn under the dumpster.
Exactly.
Maybe that
That's
you could say that. But I mean, hypothetically, let's just say for devil's advocate that, okay, Rick was giving Morse code to Daryl. Like, what are they saying? Like, how are you? What are they feeding you? Oh, dog food sandwiches? That sucks. I mean, what's the plan? Like, kill Negan when you get a chance. Oh, okay, good plan. Like, what could they possibly be communicating to each other? That would be
of
no
question. That's a great question. Well, how about we handle the possibilities of a different plan, Rob? Let's stick to another plan here and talk about maybe something that's already going on within Alexandria that I would say is more plausible than the Morse code thing. This is from Kellyanne. Let's take this voicemail from Kellyanne.
Okay, you got it. And please, people that are listening to this, weigh in on the Morse code stuff in the comments. That yes. You don't let us be, you know, just
Maybe I didn't sell it well because I was not myself sold on the theory to begin with. So, you know, lay it out if you've got a really good version.
If you've got a good case for Morse code or anti-Morse code, let us hear it. All right, here's Kellyanne.
Okay. Hey, this is Kellyanne. I have a question about what did Father Gabriel bury in the fake Maggie grave? I'm hoping he did everyone a solid and put a whole bunch of guns and even some medicine in there. But knowing Father Gabriel, he probably put canned green beans and some Bibles. What do you guys think is in there?
Classic Father Gabriel, just subsisting on those green beans and Bibles. Doesn't need anything else.
Yeah.
What are you drinking for hydration? Just the juice in the green bean can.
Ew.
That's what I live by. That's all I need.
Yeah. Boy,
Maggie Green Beans.
They did have a good case to make on Father Gabriel on Talking Dead that Chris Hardwick was saying that, you know, Father Gabriel is just always like 30% off of what everybody else is doing. Like, you know, everybody was happy. Father Gabriel was like all sketched out. Now everybody's all sketched out. Father Gabriel is like, hey, we're on to something here. This is great.
Right. I loved Father Gabriel. I loved the scene with him and Negan here, with Negan just being like, holy crap, you are creepy. You are just freaking me out.
Yeah.
I like that. I like this idea of Father Gabriel as John Turturro from Mr. Deeds. I'm very sneaky, you know, just like sliding in and popping up in unexpected places. I think that's a good look for Father Gabriel. But what do you think of this idea? Do you think that Father Gabriel planted anything in Maggie's gravesite? Do you think that there's anything down there?
No, I don't think he did. I don't think that that's the move, because there are no guns that are unaccounted for unless they were like from the Negan gun collection. And those, like Michonne was making the case of, like, they wouldn't have known about that one. But I really don't think that Father Gabriel has the wherewithal to know, oh, okay, that Negan will find the yearbook of guns and then he'll know where everything is supposed to be. So I don't think that he did that. I also think that this is a really terrible plan to tell Negan that Maggie was dead and then move her to the hilltop.
Yes. All right. So you're predicting a question. This is from Spencer Y, who writes in and says, in Sunday's podcast, Alex Kidwell believed that no one except Negan could identify Maggie if the Saviors visited the hilltop. Did he totally forget that Negan's right-hand man, Simon, a.k.a. Stephen Ogg, or Trevor from Grand Theft Auto, and a whole bunch of Saviors were supervising Rick's crew for a long period of time during that late night and early morning when Glenn and Abraham lost their lives? The Saviors had a lot of time to study each and every one of them that night and morning. If or when Negan finds out the truth about Maggie, is he going to let it slide, or will someone in Rick's crew pay the price for the lie, perhaps Father Gabriel, if Negan perchance tests Rick and asks him to dig up the body as proof of her death? So what do you think about that, Rob? You seem to be Team Spencer on this one. This Spencer, not the Spencer of The Walking Dead.
Yes, this Spencer is awesome. I would say that all these things are very possible. I mean, why are we tempting fate with Negan? If Rick's company line is give Negan whatever he wants, don't play games with Negan, don't try to trick Negan, because the price to pay if he figures out any of our little pranks, he is going to kill people. People will be dead if he figures this out. I think that if not Maggie, you know, there will be hell to pay if Negan figures this out. There was no reason to believe that Negan was going to want to marry Maggie if he found her. Like, nobody has any sort of a clue that that's how Negan's brain works. So there was no reason to hide Maggie because that Negan could be coming for her next.
I mean, he was saying stuff. I mean, obviously, I guess that's after the fact. Like, he does say to Rick, man, I would love to see Maggie right now. I'd love to bring her back. But it's all after the fact, so they couldn't have predicted that. Yeah, I think it's the classic Mike Ehrmantraut philosophy of, you know, no half measures, go full measure. If you're going to go all the way, you know, if you're going to go half measure and you're going to, you know, hide Maggie, like if you're going to let Maggie go to the hilltop or wherever you're hiding Maggie, you're already violating your new world order with Negan. Why not take that a few steps further and have some guns buried somewhere or have some sort of countermeasure that you're already planning? Like, if you're going to try and sneak one thing past Negan, why not try to sneak a few other things past Negan? And maybe that is an argument in favor of the idea that Rick has something up his sleeve here, that he is trying to figure out some sort of plan against Negan. That's the only thing that I could see that would be a point in that theory's favor. But I think just the idea of hiding Maggie right now and not hiding other things, it's like you're taking a big risk on one level. Why not take a few other risks if you're already going there, or take no risks at all and just accept your life?
And how do they know Negan doesn't have spies at Hilltop? It just seems like so. Dangerous. Such a big move, big risk, and they had no knowledge that this is his move. And I don't understand how Maggie is not still bedridden after all this. This is 3 days after she needed to be carried on a stretcher, and I guess she was walking around fine by the end of that episode, but you would think that she would still be maybe recuperating from whatever happened.
Yeah, so who knows? This is another piece of it. Spencer continues that I think is an interesting point. Daryl was present and saw the fake grave for Maggie, and it appears that Rick didn't get a chance to tell him the truth. Do you think that this fake death will further fuel and motivate Daryl to take out Negan, or will it create additional guilt and tip him into giving in and becoming a full-fledged savior? So how about this, Rob? Unless Rick is able to blink through Morse code at Daryl and be like, Daryl, don't worry, I'm just lying about this. Maggie is totally fine, and it's really good that you learned Morse code so that you can completely decipher what I am telling you currently in this very moment with my eyes.
Well, that's the best case for Morse code that you could make.
Yes,
that's what Rick had to tell Daryl.
Otherwise, Daryl is now looking at this grave and seeing the grave for Maggie, the person that he had, you know, effectively widowed by getting Glenn killed. And now she's dead as well. And Maggie and Glenn's unborn baby would be dead as well. This is horrible, horrible news for Daryl. And there's no way of telling him, Daryl, it's OK. This is a joke. It's a lie. It's not real. None of this is real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they ended up putting some sort of maybe Daryl was able to see through Father Gabriel would this is so Father Gabriel, this stupid plan. There's no way that this is actually what happened.
Maybe. Or he's just going to spiral further and further out of control, and he's just going to go all in on the saviors, or he's just going to get, I don't know, he's going to get very depressed, and he's going to request extra dog food sandwiches, and he's just going to get bloated in jail, and it's going to be a really terrible version of Daryl Dixon. This might drive him further into the arms of grief, Rob.
It might. I mean, I do think that Negan did highlight that again about how this is Daryl's fault, especially if Daryl did think that Maggie was dead also. So I think that probably this is not doing a lot of great things for Daryl's mental state.
Okay, let's talk about the gun stash, Rob.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the gun stash and the stash of guns, and everyone has an opinion on the stash of guns. Most people seem to think that this was a really stupid move for Rick to hand over this inventory list to Negan and to play this one all the way straight. First of all, Rob, just baseline, are you on that? Are you with that? Is that your philosophy on this as well, that Rick screwed up, or do you think that that Rick played this right?
Rick played this correctly. I can't say this enough times. I mean, I would be the same exact way in this zombie apocalypse where Negan comes and says, okay, we give me all the stuff and we're going to start killing people. I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be Carl, no, screw you. You said half.
Steve Davis had a counter plan that he wanted to put forward. He says, why not say that Abraham was in charge of the guns, especially since he looked like a military man? Why put someone else at risk? So why is Rick saying, In other words, Olivia here, she's the person to talk to. She's got the inventory list. Why not pin this on a dead man, Rob?
I think that they were caught off guard. I don't think that Rick was in the right headspace to come up with all of these plans. I think that that's why
they were caught with their pee-pee pants city down.
Yeah, I think that that's the case. It was only 3 days after all this other stuff happened, and they think they had more time to sort of prepare. They're dealing with the grieving for Glenn and Abraham, and they just didn't come up with all these contingency plans that Negan was going to come and ask for the yearbook of guns.
The yearbook of guns. From Robert Craig, who also disagrees with Rick's move. Why in the world would Rick give an inventory list of their weapons to Negan? It seems like a really stupid move. Do you really think we can take Rick at face value when he says he turned over all of the weapons? I'm hoping Father Gabriel stepped up and buried some weapons in those empty graves, but if the weapons are gone, how will they fight back like we know they eventually will? The hilltop seems to lack weapons, so unless the kingdom has a secret stash, I don't know how they get out of this mess. What do you guys think? So what do you think about this, Rob? How will the Alexandrians fight back? Because you know that they're going to fight back eventually. How do they fight back if they don't have a single gun in their possession anymore? And on top of it, the Saviors have all of them.
That's true. I think that ultimately we end up with some sort of like uniting of all of the different, like the Alexandria, the Hilltop, the Kingdom. I think we end up with all of the forces joining together to come after Negan.
Mm-hmm. That's enough. It's just strength in numbers is going to be enough to topple this totalitarian Negan regime.
Did the Ewoks have guns, Josh?
That's a good point.
Yeah,
good point. They had friends with guns.
They had some friends with guns, but they did a lot of stuff with rocks and battering rams that were tied to ropes and nets. Yeah.
Did we ever feel weird that the Ewoks eat people?
Yeah, because they're bears. I think they eat anything.
They're bears, and like they're going to eat, you know, Luke and Han and everybody, if not for 3PO intervening.
Yeah. Where they could just like boil them in soup.
Yeah.
With like their clothes on.
Yeah, there's an alternate universe where Return of the Jedi ends right there before Luke can even turn himself over to Vader to confront him for the final time. And they're just Luke soup at that point.
Yeah, seems weird that they wouldn't, you know, kill them first. It doesn't seem like a humane way to, you know, eat people.
Yeah, Ewoks are not humane. They're bears, as you mentioned. How do you think an Ewok would do in the world of The Walking Dead?
I think that they would be okay. I mean, they're used to like living in the woods. There's a lot of wood areas that are really taking place in The Walking Dead, no matter where they go. So I think that the Ewoks would be just fine.
A little loud.
Yeah, they're good. They're loud, but, you know, and
they'd
also
I think they'd want to temper, you know, temper it with the Yubnubs. I think they'd want to cool it on the Yubnubs. Yeah, they don't want to go too far into the Yubnubs.
I think that that's a problem. And also, I think that just from their height disadvantage that, you know, the average Ewok is probably only about, you know, 3 feet, maybe 3.5 feet tall. And I know that they have long, sharp sticks, but to be able to get a headshot on a lot of walkers, I think that that would actually be tough. They'd need some sort of like a hooked stick.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think the height disadvantage is definitely an issue. I think a lot of, you know, a lot of their take out the walker tactics, I think, would have to involve, you know, like when they're swinging from trees and they can like kick a head off or something, or they can lure a bunch of walkers into a space where they can unleash like a battering ram.
Yeah, like a clothesline.
Yeah, like they're going to really need to resort to those Ewok pranks, I think, if they're going to stand a chance here, because clean, you know, straightforward headshots, that's going to be tough. That's going to be difficult.
Yeah. But they're scavengers.
Ewoking Dead. This is a good conversation that we've just had.
Yeah. Right.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. All right. Well, let's talk about headshots some more, or at least shots.
Look at these again. Little teddy bears around here.
Oh, God. It would be really, I mean, like the talk about the scene in Return of the Jedi where it's Wicket or one of these Ewoks like finds another Ewok body that's just been smoked by an AT-AT, and your heart is really breaking in that moment. Just think about when the Ewoks encounter Negan for the first time and one of them has to get Lucille'd. That's like the most tragic scene that's ever been recorded in an alternate history.
Yeah. It really is. Very, very sad.
How great, by the way, was the Chappelle sketch as Negan?
Yeah, that was really good also. Chappelle did a good Negan.
On Saturday Night Live this weekend. If anyone is listening to this and has not checked that out yet, strongly recommended. Very, very good.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back on course here a little bit here. This is about a different type of bullet. Let's talk about Rosita's bullet. This is from Spencer once again. During Sunday's podcast, Alex Kidwell, always picking on Alex Kidwell, Spencer.
Hey.
Alex Kidwell thought that Dwight was picking on Rosita for no reason or because he thought that she was Daryl's girlfriend or because he captured her. The first encounter between Rosita and Dwight was actually when Dwight killed Denise on the train tracks and met and intimidated Rosita during that encounter. So the bad blood has been established since then. Most show watchers and fans are basically assuming that Dwight's death will come at the hands of Daryl because of the similarities between these two characters. But would it be more satisfying in a big did not see that coming moment if Rosita ends up being the person who kills Dwight, particularly with her request for Eugene to make her a bullet? Was the ending of this episode a foreshadowing of Dwight's death at the hands of Rosita? If not Dwight, then who is Rosita's bullet or bullets marked for? So what's your take on this, Rob? Who do you think is marked with Rosita's bullet? Who is Rosita's bullet going to? And is Rosita's bullet the new Chekhov's gun?
That'd be interesting if we had some sort of like an undercard battle of, you know, I think you assume like, oh, I need a bullet that she wants to take down Negan. But she hasn't been too involved with what Negan is doing outside of the season finale being there for that. But I don't think Negan ever considered her for the who was going to get Lucille. So it'd be interesting if maybe she ends up using her bullet on Dwight. And then sort of maybe reignites, you know, she was with Daryl at the time that she got caught. So I think that that'd be maybe an interesting way to go.
Yeah, I think it could be interesting. I mean, I do like the idea that we're going back to Eugene's plan to manufacture bullets. I think that's good. I'm glad we're not just letting that lie. I'm glad that's getting brought up again here on the show. As for Rosita kind of being like the avatar of that idea, it's interesting. I mean, look, we complain that there's nothing going on with Rosita as a character whatsoever on the show. And then we also complain when she starts getting a storyline. I think we got to pick a side here. So I'm going to pick the side that at least they're giving Rosita something to do. And I'm kind of interested to see where it goes. She seems to be one of very, very few Alexandrians here, not only willing to stand up against Negan, but actually starting to put a plan in place, no matter how small, no matter the fact that it involves a single bullet right now. So I'm curious to see where it goes.
From a narrative perspective, though, Rosita killing Negan is probably a million to one shot.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, like that's not how the Negan storyline ends, with a bullet from Rosita's gun.
But it could end with a bullet from Rosita's gun that she hands to Daryl somehow, or Daryl gets his hands on during some scuffle and he uses that to kill Dwight, or Rosita kills Dwight, or Dwight grabs the gun and uses this bullet to kill Rosita. Like, there's a bunch of different permutations. I think you're right. This is not going to be a bullet that is fired by Rosita that strikes Negan and takes him off the board. That just does not seem like the way that that character would be dealt with. But I think that this bullet obviously will go off. Who it's going to strike is a big question, and who's going to be ultimately pulling the trigger is also a question worth asking as well.
Okay. All right.
Let's bring this in with a couple of final questions. This is from Jennifer. Do you guys think that this season could actually be the fall of Rick? How possible is it that Rick never recovers completely and another member of the Alexandria crew takes on the alpha role? What about this, Rob? Do you think that Rosita is going to be the new alpha character here in Alexandria and Rick is never going to have the stomach for it again and Rosita is going to be the new main character of The Walking Dead?
Stop. Come on.
Really?
Really?
You don't think so?
So Andrew Lincoln is either going to die on the show or he's just going to become some like...
He'll be okay.
I mean, we already got close to this with Herschel's Farm, and Rick wasn't right. Even part of the United Nations of Herschel's Farm and the Security Council. He wasn't even on the committee at that point. And we're not going back there. We're not going to have, you know, Rick ultimately retire from being the leader and then just sort of like sit by. And then Rosita all of a sudden is going to rise to power.
Probably not. But do you think that there is going to be somebody who picks up the torch here before Rick finally gets back on his feet? Do you think that somebody is going to lead the way and Rick is going to suddenly be woke to the possibility that he can take down Negan? Once he is over his initial shell shock of Negan coming into power, is Rick going to be able to rise up and fight back?
Father Gabriel. No, I think that you yeah. What I do think is that there is a theme of the women of Alexandria / the Hilltop really being the people that are going to be leading this revolution in Michonne in Maggie. I'd put Rosita in that group also, that it seems like that the men are sort of like, we don't know what to do. And the women are sort of like, we fight.
Yeah, they know what to do. They fight. They're here. They're ready for it. So we'll see. We'll see how that all goes. This is from Lauren O. Lauren O writes, I really don't understand why Rick and his people don't just leave. They could just pack up what they have and peace out in the middle of the night. I know starting over is hard, but they've done it enough times. Do you think it's because they fear what would happen to Daryl? So what do you think, Rob? Do you think that their loyalty to Daryl is the only thing keeping them tethered to Alexandria? Is there another reason why they're not sneaking out? And would you recommend against it? You should stay exactly where you are.
See, I do think that probably any of them could just make a run for it. Like if they said, OK, we're going on a run, like if Spencer and Rosita decided, all right, let's peace out. Let's just never come back here again. I think that they could get away. The problem is they all can't get away at the point where like a huge caravan is loading up and leaving. I mean, I think we saw that in the season finale where there was just one roadblock after another. I think that Negan has a lot of resources at his disposal. And I think that if you had like a large group, like a mass exodus, I think that Negan would catch wind of that. So I think that one or two people could say, like if Rick got like Carl and Judith in the car and then decided just to, you know, run for it, maybe they could get away. But I do think that there probably would be hell to pay for the people that didn't leave. And I think that Negan may know if like a bunch of people try to leave at the same time.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that's probably correct. All right, Rob, that's about it. That's our Walking Dead feedback show.
Very fun stuff today, Josh. I think the hashtag has to be Ewalking Dead.
I'm into it. I'm yep. feeling it. Yeah, yep, nub.
Yep, nub. I really love E Talking Dead, which is on right after, hosted by Chris Hardwicket. It's really good.
He's kind of got like a, I'm not going to say he's got like a Han Solo thing going on, Chris Hardwick, but I'll give him like a little bit of a Lone Star-ish.
Lone Star, wow.
Yeah, it's a little bit Lone Star.
Good stuff. All right.
Yeah.
So, of course, we have our Sunday night show, and we're going to be live after the show. Or at least I will be back with Alex Kidwell. Josh is getting sucked into the Westworld vortex for these next couple of Sundays.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I will be unable to be on the live show on the next three Sunday nights, but I will be back for the finale. No problem there. It's just work is pulling me away. Nothing I can do about it, but I will be here every week on the feedback.
All right, we'll hold down the fort, and we'll talk to you next week on the feedback show. And, of course, the aforementioned Westworld podcast is up and is hot on post show recap.
It's hot. I can't say anything more about it without spoiling anything, but it was big episode this week. Big show going on. Big fan of the Westworld renewed for a season two already, Rob.
Yes, but I heard not until 2018.
Yeah, so we'll have to see if we're all still standing by the time that season two of Westworld comes back.
Yeah.
And if we are, then we'll podcast about it. But, you know, it's a non-zero chance that maybe we're not here.
Yes. There's always a chance. All right, Josh.
Always a chance.
Great stuff. Of course, we love to hear the comments on postshowrecaps.com. And, of course, we do appreciate when you subscribe to the podcast. Go to postshowrecaps.com/TWDiTunes. Josh is on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. I'm at Rob Sestrina. We will talk to you Sunday night. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.